Welcome back, everyone. Pastor Chris here, keeping you company on our journey through Genesis. Hope you're enjoying the trip. And speaking of trips, Genesis 29 at verse 1. Then Jacob continued on his journey and came to the land of the eastern peoples. So Jacob is back on the road, a changed man after a powerful encounter with God. The Hebrew here literally means happy feet. He's got a spring in his step now. He thought that he was utterly alone, but the Lord was in that place. And the Lord promised, "I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go." That's a pretty good reason for happy feet. It does not mean an easy road. So Jacob's happy feet take him back to his mom's hometown, Paddan Aram, which still sounds like Bananarama to me, but that's beside the point. Verse 2, there he saw a well in the open country, with three flocks of sheep lying near it. So Jacob approaches the shepherds to ask where they're from. Haran, do you know Laban? That's Jacob's uncle. Yes, we know him. And in verse 6, here comes his daughter Rachel with the sheep. Enter stage left, Rachel. A quick side note here. Through most of history and all over the world, a first cousin was a good candidate for marriage. Today, we understand genetic risks. DNA loses information with each generation, and inbreeding multiplies that loss. Four millennia back, that likely wasn't an issue because DNA was closer to the original. But God did set strong rules against incest in Leviticus 18. Thank God for that. But here, get over the cousin thing and recognize that Jacob just got his first look at a very pretty girl. Verse 7 is funny. As Rachel approaches, Jacob tells the shepherds to water the sheep and take them back to pasture. In other words, scram. Do people still say scram? Skedaddle, fellas. I think Jacob is hoping to meet Rachel without the guys present. But the boys make some excuse about waiting for all the flocks to gather, large stone over the well, blah, blah, blah. Verse 9. While he was still talking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherd. Now check out this move. When Jacob saw Rachel and Laban's sheep, he went over and rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well and watered his uncle's sheep. This is a man move here. Let me move that large stone for you, miss. And how about I water those sheep for you, too? Hey, first impressions matter. And first thing, Jacob makes himself helpful. Now, this is not just a guy thing. Guess who Jacob learned it from? Remember, it was his mom, Rebecca, who did the very same thing for the camels when Abraham's servant arrived in Paddan Aram, Rebecca's hometown. And that first impression got her a husband. A humble heart to help is attractive in both men and women. And check out the result. Verse 11, then Jacob kissed Rachel and began to weep aloud. Now the kiss is not necessarily romantic. It was a normal greeting, though I think he enjoyed this one a little more. But the weeping? Jake, my man, hold it together. But I get it. He's been through a lot. Sometimes you gotta let it out. His timing could use some work. But that's okay. I'm still rooting for you, Jakey. Actually, these are my ancestors, so I'm definitely rooting for you. Anyway, Rachel tells her dad, and Laban runs out to meet Jacob. He embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his home. See? Told you the kiss wasn't romantic. Now this is our second encounter with Laban, and he is once again the picture of hospitality. But don't trust first impressions too quick. Some time passes, and Jacob sets to work as a shepherd with Laban's sheep. Laban asks Jacob what wages he should pay him, and I think Jacob's been waiting for this one. Verse 16, now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel had a lovely figure and was beautiful. Enter stage right, drama. Two sisters. Leah is older, Rachel is beautiful. Is that fair? Is it right to say one sister is prettier? The Bible doesn't offer commentary on right or wrong here. It just tells it like it is. How we react probably says more about us than about God. But this is life. Some people have more natural beauty. The rest of us, not so much. And in most societies, that creates some drama. For God's part, he reminds us that he doesn't see us the way people do. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. So why does God make some people more beautiful in the first place? I don't know. It's worth pondering, though. I think we learn a lot when we get past the surface and see people the way God does. We all face different challenges. Some are ignored for their averageness. Others are objectified for their beauty. Both wrong, but it happens. Pay attention here, and we just might learn something about the tricky relationship between love and looks. Right or wrong, Jacob falls for the pretty one. Verse 18, Jacob was in love with Rachel and said, "I'll work for you 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel." Laban agrees, and in verse 20, "So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her." Now that is almost too sweet, but I get it. I used to drive 20 miles through traffic every day just to see my girlfriend. And no kidding, I loved the traffic because it brought me to her. We're married 20 years now, and the traffic is still worth it. Back in Jacob's story, there's a lesson here on romance. If you just love her because being with her feels good, that's fun, but it's not love. It is the work and the weight and your attitude through it that really proves your heart. Understand that no sex before marriage has a purpose. Girls, give him time to prove his character. Guys, show her that she's worth waiting for. So Jacob waits and works. The time comes, and Laban throws a wedding feast. Verse 23. But when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and Jacob made love to her. Oh no, I don't know how much alcohol was involved, but I guarantee Laban planned this carefully. 25. When morning came, there was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me?" Oh boy, hard truth here. Just because you do right doesn't mean the world will do right by you. 26. Laban replied, "It is not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one." And that should remind Jacob that he hasn't always done right. After all, deceiving someone by switching the older with the younger is a familiar story. Laban basically says, "Around here, we don't put the younger before the older, like some folks." The deceiver has become the deceived. Now, that doesn't make it right. Jacob was essentially raped by way of deception, and it's very wrong. So Laban makes Jacob a deal. "You can have Rachel too for 7 more years of work." What can he do? He takes the deal and marries Rachel. Now he has 2 wives. Verse 30. Jacob made love to Rachel also, and his love for Rachel was greater than his love for Leah. Oh no, this is a recipe for rivalry. But in verse 31, when the Lord saw that Leah was not loved, he enabled her to conceive, but Rachel remained childless. That verse impresses me. The Lord sees the unloved. So Leah has a son, Reuben, and she says, "Surely my husband will love me now." Yet he doesn't. Time passes, and another son. "Because the Lord heard that I am not loved, he gave me this one too." So she named him Simeon, which means one who hears. Son number 3. "Now at last my husband will become attached to me." So he was named Levi, attached. She's still pining for a love that Jacob just won't give. And then a 4th son. "This time I will praise the Lord." So she named him Judah, which means praise. And for the first time, Leah looks to God alone and simply praises him.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.